Chapter 9. The Prophetic Countdown Completed. As the author of this book, this is the most challenging of anything I have ever written. Before looking into the countdown that is leading up to when Christ returns, I feel compelled to first explain why writing this book has been so difficult, as it bears greatly upon what this chapter covers. As stated from the beginning in chapter 1, it has been extremely challenging for me to address what I believe I so clearly see about the eruption of a massive thermonuclear war that is closing in on this world. How can anyone best address such a thing, especially when it is a matter of something that is revealed by the great God who has created all life? The task is even more daunting when you consider the divisions of religious beliefs that exist throughout the world. How can one go about showing people how they have been deceived by those beliefs without offending many? The reality is that it is not possible, and that simply compounds the difficulty of such a task. The entire purpose for writing this book has been to share knowledge of the truth about prophetic end-time events that are now nearing their final fulfillment. Even as I am writing this, I'm somewhat sickened by watching the current level of fear and financial panic that has been gripping nation after nation due to the COVID-19 pandemic, while knowing that this event is puny compared to what will soon follow. Right now, the world may be finding it difficult to exercise social distancing, staying confined in homes, keeping groceries and other necessities stocked, keeping up with various bills, etc. But that is nothing compared to what will happen when a world war begins. Food and medical supplies will become far more scarce. However, in this coming war, there will be shortages of electricity, water, gas, the use of the internet, and many other things that are taken for granted at this time. Sharing such knowledge carries pain, anguish, heartache, frustration, and so much more. Yet, I believe I am tasked with doing just that. The only encouragement I receive from this is the hope that God reveals concerning the kind of help and favor that some will receive directly from Him and His Son. That will be a result of those who will listen, turn to Him, and then be able to be delivered into a new age, into the millennium that will follow. Throughout this book, I have purposefully refrained from referring to myself, except only slightly in chapter 1, as a matter of explaining the dilemma and challenge in writing this book. The reason for rewriting the chapter. This chapter was already written when it was brought to my attention that it did not seem complete. It seemed that it might be lacking. The manner in which it had first been written led to concern that it might not contain enough explanation of where some of the material is spoken of in Scripture. To simply say that certain things had been revealed also caused concern, since a reader might not receive this as being a convincing argument to make, and they might feel the need for a more convincing argument or facts. I deeply understand this concern, and because of that, it has become very clear how this final chapter is supposed to be addressed. Up to this point, I was still very determined not to speak of myself, because this book is not about me. Then, I was reminded of why I am the one who has to write this and no one else. The content of what follows concerning this countdown to World War III and Christ's coming cannot be properly written without including what I have been shown by God that I am to say. The bottom line is that I have been given a commission, a job to do, that is from God. In this book, I have tried to steer clear from addressing this, and I was almost successful in doing what I wanted. To write about myself in the context of what I must say may sound a little strange and religiously fanatical to many in this world, but I cannot be concerned with that because I must be concerned with what is right before God. Candidly, I cannot help but be reminded of the prophet Jonah, who tried to escape having to tell Nineveh what God told him to say about their destruction. I am not Jonah, but what I am to inform others concerning the writing of this book is that I am a prophet of God and have been sent by Him to do this job. In addition, I am the last apostle for the Church of God in this final age of mankind. I hate the fact that it has to take time and people having to experience the most destructive of end-time events before the reality of the events prove what I am saying. By that time, it will be too late to prepare. It would be so much better if the truth that God has revealed and given to me would speak for itself. It has been the task of prophets through the ages to warn mankind of what will happen as a result of choosing to not listen to God. In those instances, the prophets would clearly identify the fact of who they were and that God had sent them with the messages they carried. Only one great nation responded to the dire warnings of a prophet, and that was Assyria, whose capital was Nineveh. The king of Assyria listened to Jonah's warning. As a result of their repentance, Nineveh's destruction did not come. Incredibly so, it was only a few years later that God moved Assyria to conquer Israel and lead them captive. So from this point forward, there will be things that I will state as a prophet and an apostle that have to do with those things that God has revealed to me to give. I am not as one of the prophets of old who were given prophecies that were given for the purpose of being recorded as scripture. Instead, I am one who has been given to interpret many of those prophecies that apply to this end time about those things that are now going to come to pass. This is perhaps best understood concerning the prophets Daniel and John, who wrote much prophecy concerning this end time, but they did not know how or when these prophecies would apply to world events. They did not understand what they had written. Daniel even inquired of God if he could be given more so that he could understand. God simply told him to shut up the book. Although God had revealed to Daniel what to write, he answered him by explaining that what he had written was not for his time, but it was for the end time. The book of Revelation was written by John, and these prophecies were revealed to him by God while in prison on the Isle of Patmos. He had no idea what all those prophecies were about, but those things are now being revealed because this is that time for which most of it was written. I cannot help if some do not find what is written as being authoritative or true, but it is. So when I speak of something being revealed, it will be up to the reader to decide whether they believe that is true or not. There is simply nothing that can be quoted from Scripture that proves these things are true. The proof is contained in all that has been previously written that exposes those things that are false in traditional Christianity and what is true biblically. The point being in all this is that it isn't the individual who carries the message that is important, but the fact that what they say comes from God that is important. However, how people respond to what God has to say has most often determined how any prophet has been received. That in turn has much to do with how God will respond to those who listen and to those who do not. God is making it clear in this final age of mankind's self-rule that he will listen to those who will listen to him and who begin making changes in their lives based on what he has revealed. The beginning of the countdown. When the apostasy finally came to pass, the church was unaware of what had actually taken place. The people did not see that this event was the prophesied apostasy. They did not understand that what took place in the church was the fulfillment of this prophecy and that this would serve as the sign to God's church that his son would now return. No one knew. It wasn't until several years later that God revealed that an actual countdown to Christ's coming had begun on the day of that apostasy. Even though Joseph Tkach Sr. showed his opposition and rebellion to God by delivering a sermon contrary to true doctrine, God had not yet revealed that Joseph Tkach Sr. was the fulfillment of the man of sin, the son of perdition. The church did not yet know that he had fulfilled this prophecy given by Paul, which would serve as the revelation of Christ's imminent coming. To this day, the overwhelming majority of the church that became scattered is still blind to this truth. Although some of this has been covered, there is more to Paul's prophecy concerning this apostasy that needs to be addressed. As one continues through this account in 2 Thessalonians, one should begin to clearly see why this unique event is so pivotal to end-time prophecy. Quote, "Now you know what withholds," in Greek, holds back, restrains, detains, "so that he," the man of sin, "might be revealed," in Greek, "to make known, to disclose what before was unknown," in his time. The mystery of iniquity is already at work, but for now it is only withheld, same Greek word, holds back, restrains, detains, until he is taken out of the way. Then shall that wicked be revealed, in Greek, made known, illuminated, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 6-8. This prophecy shows that the man of sin, that wicked one, would be revealed. Quote, "whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming." Most who are scattered after the apostasy have not been able to understand this verse because they only see this as being fulfilled in a literal, physical way. They believe this prophecy can only be fulfilled at the time of the actual coming of Joshua the Christ on the very day the end time comes to a close. But it is this very verse that shows how God alone would reveal the identity of the man of sin and what this was to mean for the church. Although most had neither ears to hear nor eyes to see, God did make it abundantly clear that he was the one who would reveal the man of sin. After Joseph Takach Sr. betrayed the trust given to him by giving that defiant sermon, the spiritual temple of God became defiled. An abomination of unprecedented proportion had taken place within the church. Exactly 40 Sabbaths to the day and hour in his time zone, after Joseph Takach Sr. gave that sermon, he died. This was God's own declaration. By God taking his life, he revealed that Joseph Takach Sr. was indeed the son of perdition, the man of sin. By this, God also revealed that the world had now entered a countdown for the end time. This was finally the time, after nearly 6,000 years, for end time prophecies to begin being fulfilled. That process began on the same day Joseph Takach Sr. gave his apostatizing sermon, but it was God who had to reveal it. This prophetic fulfillment of God destroying the man of sin is the very event that declared, illuminated, the coming of Joshua the Christ to God's own people. The time for his return had now come and was no longer being held back from view to the church. The time had come, the countdown to Christ's coming had arrived. In Scripture, the number 40 is used as a declaration from God of his judgment. Because of mankind's rebellion in the days of Noah, God's judgment was carried out through a flood that lasted for 40 days and nights. Another example of the use of 40 was when God allowed the children of Israel, because of their rebellion, to wander in the wilderness for 40 years. The very man who had been set in authority in God's church, directly under Christ, declared that the seventh-day Sabbath was no longer a commandment for God's people. Is it any wonder, then, that because of his rebellion, God gave a judgment upon Joseph Takach Sr. that would be accomplished in exactly 40 Sabbaths, to the hour, from the very Sabbath when he declared the Sabbath day itself was no longer relevant? So the first thing God revealed to his church concerning a countdown was the matter of the importance of the period of the 280 days, 40 times 7, that revealed his judgment, where 40 is used for judgment and 7 is used to show God's purpose being complete. When Joseph Takach Sr. gave his sermon that polluted and desecrated God's temple, the Church of God, the prophesied abomination of desolation of the spiritual temple of God became fulfilled. This prophecy of Paul concerning the apostasy had begun. God revealed a very specific judgment that he had personally executed upon the man of sin, this son of perdition. Exactly 280 days later, God took his life. Once the remnant church became aware of the significance of this judgment upon this prophesied man of sin, the son of perdition, more understanding was given concerning important periods of time that fit into what the church was experiencing. Before continuing into more about the importance of specific prophetic periods and the numeric meaning that is used in biblical revelation, it would be good to know that God is very ordered and precise in how he fulfills his word. Prophecies are fulfilled in a very exacting manner, especially numerically. The use of the prophetic number 7 defines what God makes complete and reveals how God brings an end to mankind's self-rule and the establishment of the rule of his kingdom. It is after 6,000 years of self-rule and the beginning of the reign of Joshua the Christ for the next 1,000 years that a complete 7,000-year plan for mankind is revealed. That 7,000 years is a prophetic fulfillment of what the weekly seventh-day Sabbath foreshadows. The first 6 days are for mankind to do his own work, but the purpose of the Sabbath day is to rest from that work and focus instead on the work of God, God's purpose, plan, and will for mankind. In like manner, the first 6,000 years are for mankind to live its own ways, but during the following 1,000 years, it is to focus upon God's plan and purpose that is to be accomplished under the reign of his kingdom. These are simple examples that have just been explained. However, prophetic counts and numeric usage contained in prophetic revelations can become confusing. Not all have the same interest in mathematics and numerical systems, so there are some who will understandably not enjoy portions of this chapter. Nevertheless, these things reveal much about God and how exacting and perfect he is in all things. End time prophetic periods of 1,260 days. The church has long understood that there are specific end time periods associated with Christ's coming that involve 1,260 days, but it has not understood how these fit into place or how they would be specifically fulfilled. These prophetic end-time periods are spoken of in different ways, but they are all equivalent to 1,260 days. In Revelation, there is a description of 42 months, which is about a specific period in the countdown to Christ's return. Other places in Scripture refer to a time, times, and half a time, 3.5 years, that is also prophetically equivalent to exactly 1,260 days, where a time is defined as 360 days, times times 2 is 720 days, and half a time is 180 days, which, when added together, is 1,260 days. That is 360 days according to God's biblical calendar and not the 365 days of the Roman calendar. It was after God had revealed his judgment, 7 times 40, concerning the man of sin and that the end-time apostasy had now taken place in his church, that he then began to reveal that a countdown to Christ's return had begun. Yet, in the midst of all this, the church did not yet know when Christ's return might be or how prophetic periods of time fit into that countdown. The first prophetic end-time period that God eventually revealed to the church concerned a prophecy in Revelation. It is about the aftermath of the scattering of the church that followed the apostasy. Quote, "She," speaking prophetically of God's church, "bore a male child, Christ, who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron, and her child was caught up to God and his throne," speaking of the resurrection of Joshua the Christ. "Then the woman," God's church, "fled into the wilderness, where she has a place prepared by God, that they should feed her there 1,260 days. Revelation chapter 12, verses 5 and 6. This was the first of several such periods that God would reveal. It proved to be more than a coincidence that from the day of the apostasy on the 17th of December, 1994, to the Pentecost of 1998, 1,260 days had been fulfilled. That period of 1,260 days was especially meaningful to God's church because it has known that this specific count was a prophetic period that would occur in the end time. This is a specific prophecy that reveals God's protection on a specific portion of the church that became scattered throughout the world after the apostasy, scattered in the wilderness. This remnant was protected from any onslaught of Satan until God could spiritually rejuvenate, by being fed by God, this scattered group until they could once again stand on their feet. Several years after the Pentecost of 1998, God revealed that this was the day that the remnant of the scattered church had been reestablished as the one true church that God would work through until Christ returned. That Pentecost of 1998 not only marked the beginning for the remnant church for the end time, but it also marked the end of the last of 7 eras of God's church, the Laodicean era. Although it has been revealed that 1,260 days had been fulfilled between the apostasy and the establishment of the remnant church, it had not yet been revealed that there would be several specific prophetic end-time periods of 1,260 days that would be completed before World War III and Christ's return. 2008, the pivotal prophetic year for Christ's coming. As the church began to draw closer to the year 2008, God began to reveal more about the fact that there were multiple prophetic end-time periods of 1,260 days that fit into a countdown to Christ's return. In 2006, God had revealed that the year 2008 would be a pivotal year concerning a final witness that he was going to give mankind. As a result of that revelation, I authored a book entitled 2008, God's Final Witness, which addressed that witness, Testimony of God. Indeed, the year 2008 did prove to be a prophetically pivotal year for God's small remnant church. An important revelation that 2008 would be the year for the opening of the seventh seal led to my becoming aware of a countdown. There is much more to this story, but for now, only the highlights will be covered in order to show some of the method God has used for revealing this preciseness of his prophetic revelation in the count to his son's return. Because God had revealed that 2008 was of prime importance for the fulfillment of the countdown to his son's return, the church became focused upon a specific date for his return in 2012. That understanding later proved to be incomplete because the conclusion was based upon all that God had revealed to that point in time, the present truth that had been given. But there was much more that God would yet reveal. The present truth, 2 Peter chapter 1 verse 12, is an expression used by the Apostle Peter and bears the same meaning to this day. It is about the fact that over the past 6,000 years, God has been progressively revealing truth to mankind. The greatest of that truth is now being given because God is preparing the world to begin receiving His Son and His ruling kingdom at Christ's coming. The present truth is that truth which has been given at any moment in time. There would be numerous things that would happen in God's church during the year 2008, and there would be much that would happen to the global economy at that time, which in turn had a great deal to do with the beginning of God's final witness to mankind, which is covered in 2008, God's Final Witness. Not only was it given that 2008 would be the year that the seventh seal of Revelation would be opened, but also a new truth was given to the church that year. Christ would return on a holy day of Pentecost. It was because of this that the church began to learn of specific segments of end-time prophetic periods that fit into this final end-time countdown. Since it had been revealed so clearly that 2008 was such an important year prophetically and that Christ would return on a holy day of Pentecost, it was exciting to learn what was given next that concerned a prophecy in Daniel chapter 12. It is about a specific end-time period of 1,335 days, which represents the complete sealing of the 144,000 who are to be resurrected and then to return with Christ. To summarize all this as simply as possible, the Pentecost of 2012 was first thought to be the time Christ would return because of everything that was being so rapidly revealed to the church through 2008. Since 2008 was such an important prophetic year and Pentecost had been revealed as the holy day Christ would return, I looked forward to a potential Pentecost that would have prophetic significance to the year 2008. It did not take long to learn something that proved to be incredibly exciting. The only time that could be measured to a specific Pentecost from the year 2008 was the Pentecost of 2012. In counting back 1,335 days from the Pentecost of 2012, it led to the 30th of September, 2008. It was astounding to learn that this was the date for the Feast of Trumpets in 2008. This now became incredibly inspiring for the vast majority of the church, as this had awesome meaning that everyone understood. The Feast of Trumpets pictures the trumpeting of the announcement of the coming of the King of Kings, the coming of the Messiah. That is the primary meaning of that holy day. One of the primary things contained in the meaning of Pentecost is that it reveals the coming of Christ with the 144,000 to reign on earth. So God gave the church the knowledge that the trumpets of 2008 was the time for the announcement, a trumpeting, that a countdown was in progress that would lead to Christ's return. This in turn led to understanding that the 1,290 days spoken of in Daniel chapter 12 occurred on November 14, 2008, which God then revealed was the date for the opening of the seventh seal of Revelation. God's meticulous timing and work. The events surrounding the year 2008 have only been spoken of partially here, as there is much, much more to the entire story. Most of that story only has great significance to God's church, and, candidly, it would be nearly impossible for others to glean any insightful or meaningful understanding at this time. It is for these reasons that I have chosen to simply give a somewhat condensed overview of the most significant events that reveal the marvel of the prophetic countdown that is currently underway and nearly at an end. It is important to understand that God indeed has given specific markers for this end-time countdown. One can watch for these markers in order to be best prepared for the final end-time events that are now fast approaching. The first thing that God revealed to His church in 2008 was that the Pentecost of 2012 was the first time given for when Christ could return. Although that did not happen, the prophetic timing from the apostasy to Pentecost of 2012 carried deeply meaningful and profound prophetic detail that revealed the stunning meticulousness in which God is working. Once all the prophetic counts and the timing of these are covered and are able to be seen, it will become far more exciting and even inspiring to grasp that which is highly impossible as a mathematical probability. Yet God made it come to pass, and fit together profoundly so. Between when the apostasy occurred up to the Pentecost of May 27, 2012, was an astonishing revelation of time, because this period of time contained a total of 6,370 days. When counting to the Pentecost of 2012, the 27th is not included in the count, as Christ's return would have been at the very end of the 26th, just when the day of Pentecost would begin on the 27th. Two counts equaling 6,370 days. It is profound what God began to reveal to the church about a countdown that had begun that would lead up to Christ's return. Not only was it remarkable that the church was given such a comprehensive count that equals exactly 6,370 days, but there were two separate simultaneous counts that equaled this same count. The first count that amounted to 6,370 days is a specific multiple of three numbers that have highly significant prophetic meaning. God revealed those numbers as 7, 70, and 13. When these numbers are multiplied together, they equal 6,370 days. Earlier, God's judgment upon the man of sin was shown by revealing that he died 280 days after the apostasy. This number is the multiple of the 7-day week times 40, where 40 is a number used prophetically that includes judgment. The man of sin sought to change God's Sabbath of the 7th day of the week, and God executed his judgment against him for doing so by ending his life exactly 7 times 40 days later, 280 days, to the hour from when he declared that it was no longer required to observe the Sabbath. The number 7 that was used here is the number that contains the prophetic meaning of being complete, completeness. When used prophetically, the number 70 is one that has always been known to contain the meaning of Christ's coming. This comes from that well-known prophecy of Daniel that is widely known as the 70 weeks prophecy. For this count, following the apostasy, it was not a matter of years, but of days, with 7 days in a week times 70, which is the number for Christ's return. There are 490 days. Then there is one more multiple in this total of 6,370 days, and that is the number 13. This number has great significance and carries the meaning of apostasy and rebellion. This is even recognized in various reference books. It is also a number that is prophetically attached to Satan, who is the ultimate epitome of rebellion and apostasy. He is the origin of that spirit. All of these dates and numbers carry great meaning for God's church, because the church understands that when Christ returns, he will bound Satan for a little more than 1,000 years. Satan and the demonic world will not be allowed to be in the presence of mankind during the millennium or during the final 100 years when all of the rest of mankind are resurrected to a second physical life. So not only did this overall number, 6,370, have great meaning concerning Christ's second coming, 70, but it also reflected the meaning of Satan's rule, 13, over this earth coming to an end, with Christ being established to rule instead, which completes, number 7, God's plan for the establishment of his kingdom to rule on earth, 7 times 70 times 13, which equals 6,370. Then, in addition to that, what had happened in the church through a prophesied rebellion of the man of sin, the son of perdition, in the apostasy, had incredible meaning in the use of the number 13. Indeed, the meaning contained in this entire period of time from the apostasy to the first potential date for Christ's return proved incredibly inspiring to God's church. These numbers continue to become more astounding and revealing the further we go into them. It is so very far beyond any possibility of coincidence or chance that it defies the imagination. The mathematical probability of these numbers occurring, along with the dates associated with them, continues to increase exponentially the more that it is added. The numbers that have been used, which result in such totals, are in themselves astounding, but the fact that exact meaning is also contained in all of them carries this into a realm of incredible mathematic improbability and is a powerful witness as to who the designer of it is. A second count equaling 6,370 days. This total period of 6,370 days contains God's indelible and undeniable handprint. However, God did not stop at simply giving a period of time that validated Christ's coming by the use of a literal 70 weeks prophecy. God also revealed the importance of the 1,260-day time cycles that identify prophetic end-time periods. This period of time was mentioned earlier, showing how it is described in different ways: 42 months, time, times, and half a time, and 3.5 years. Yet, it is always used in the context of specific end-time prophetic periods that last 1,260 days. This second count becomes important because of what it reveals about mankind. It was in 2008 that God began giving a final witness of mankind that testifies about their ways, the way of mankind. It is important to note that this witness ended on the Pentecost of 2012. The ways of mankind have produced great confusion, unhappiness, suffering, injustice, wars, and much perversion in life. That confusion created by mankind has permeated every facet of life and is reflected in the failure in government, religion, economic practice, society, and family life. And now, with modern technology, mankind will annihilate itself if God does not intervene to stop it. Mankind is incomplete and needs God and His ways if it is to survive. The number 5 is about mankind, and this number is used to reveal an important aspect about mankind and its relationship to God. This number reveals the ways of mankind in contrast to the ways of God. The ways of mankind are opposite to that of God, and these ways reveal the selfish nature that exists in mankind. Although this use of the number 5 is not as clearly revealed as the numbers 7, 40, and 70, nevertheless, it was given to God's church long ago to understand its significance prophetically as being about mankind. Mankind's selfish nature is motivated by the lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh, and the pride of life. 1 John chapter 2, verse 16. Whereas the ways of God are that of total unselfish and outgoing love toward others, which includes mercy, forgiveness, kindness, patience, peace, and love that is genuine, sacrificing, and always giving toward others. In this second count that equals 6,370, the number 5 is used in relationship to these cycles of 1,260 days. The use of the number 5 has great meaning here because it reveals the way of mankind that has led to God's judgment on the earth due to the fact that mankind has not listened to Him and has now brought itself to the point of annihilation. In this number of 6,370 days, there are 5 equivalent periods of 1,260 days, 6,300 days, with 70 days remaining. That addition of 70 days clearly signifies Christ's return. This was not a matter of chance, but of design, and signified God's purpose, that mankind had been judged by a final witness that reveals how it has responded to God for right at 6,000 years now. The first and fifth prophetic end time periods. All these different counts and the dates on which they occurred have become a matter of awe to God's church, as these reveal patterns and order that could not be by chance, but only by design, which has been simply dumbfounding and deeply inspiring. Then, in addition to what has been shown about those 5 end-time prophetic periods, God revealed that 2 had very important and specific significance. The first, which has already been referred to, was the period from the date of the apostasy, December 17, 1994, to the Pentecost of 1998, on the 30th of May. Without going into great detail, there is a verse that applies specifically to this first prophetic end-time period. The event of the apostasy was catastrophic upon God's church, and as a result, what remained of the church became widely scattered. The church was so weak and devastated when this occurred that God protected it for a period of time until the remnant could become established with the restructuring and strength it needed in order to continue on to Christ's return. Quote, "Then the woman, God's church, was given 2 wings of a great eagle, symbolism for protection, that she might fly into the wilderness to her place, where she is nourished for a time and times and half a time, from the presence of the serpent, Satan." Revelation chapter 12, verse 14. Satan had been allowed to attack God's church by powerfully influencing and instigating the apostasy. Afterward, God gave the church protection from Satan so that he could no longer attack it for a period of time, times, and half a time. This has already been explained to be a period of 1,260 prophetic days. This protection was given in order for God to work with a remnant of His former church in order to help them grow in strength once more so that they would be able to be strong enough to stand against any future influence and attacks by Satan. It was on the Pentecost of 1998 that God's church became reestablished as the remnant who would continue on until the coming of Joshua the Christ. The second specific end-time prophetic period of 1,260 days that God revealed to be of great significance was the fifth period. That was from the time when the seven trumpets of the seventh seal were blown, December 14, 2008, to May 27, 2012, Pentecost, 1,260 days later. God had already revealed to his church that 2008 was the pivotal year concerning the countdown to his son returning as King of Kings. He also revealed it was the Feast of Trumpets of 2008 that announced Christ's return with the 144,000. This, in turn, led to the revelation that the seven trumpets of Revelation were blown on December 14th of 2008. That 1,260 days which followed and then led up to Pentecost of 2012 was also revealed to be the exact time of God's final witness of mankind. Although these seven trumpets were blown in December of 2008, the events they announced had been held back from beginning until all 144,000 have become sealed. It is because of this that new markers were set beyond 2012 for the timing of Christ's return. This is because World War III and Christ's return cannot take place until all 144,000 have been sealed. God has not revealed what significance or meaning there may be in the other three periods of 1,260 days that lie in between that first and fifth period, or even if there is any significant meaning in them other than the fact that they add great meaning for the total being five prophetic end-time periods. First count to 2012, with two prophetic signs of Christ's coming. Apostasy up to Pentecost 2012. December 17, 1994, up to May 27, 2012. Total number of prophetic days, 6,370. First sign, 7 times 70 times 13 equals 6,370. Second sign, 5 times 1,260 plus 70 equals 6,370. First prophetic 1,260 days, December 17, 1994, to May 30th, 1998. Second, third, and fourth periods, plus 70 days, May 31st, 1998, to December 13th, 2008. Fifth prophetic 1,260 days, December 14th, 2008, up to May 27th, 2012. Numbers, prophetic significance. 5. The ways of mankind. 7. That which God makes complete. 13. Rebellion and apostasy, Satan. 40. God's judgment. 70. The coming of Christ. 1,260 days, a prophetic period marking the end time. Two additional prophetic periods. God gave five end time prophetic periods that led up to the Pentecost of 2012, and since that time, He has revealed the significance in the addition of two more prophetic periods of 1,260 days that led up to the Pentecost of 2019. Since that time, God has not revealed any other clear prophetic periods that may yet become fulfilled. Before addressing the fact that no new periods have been revealed at this time, it is important to first look at what has been revealed by the two additional periods that led up to 2019. This will help to shed more light on exactly how far along in the countdown that we actually are. The addition of this new period from the Pentecost of 2012 to the Pentecost of 2019 contains two more end-time prophetic periods within it. This has great meaning and significance to the complete countdown. From Pentecost on the 27th of May 2012, counting that day, to Pentecost on the 9th of June 2019, there was a total of 2,570 days. This number contained an additional 50 days that remained beyond these two final prophetic periods. 1,260 plus 1,260 plus 50 equals 2,570. Again, the mathematical probability of this additional period with the addition of 50 days and the dates on which these have fallen is astronomical. These two prophetic end-time periods following the Pentecost of 2012 led up to April 21st, 2019. This was a date within the annual observance of the Days of Unleavened Bread that follows Passover. It is incredibly inspiring to see that April 21st, 2019 was the day that represents the fulfillment of the wave sheaf offering, which is about Joshua the Christ being received by God as not only the Passover of all mankind, but now also as high priest. The wave sheaf pictured the time when Joshua the Christ fulfilled the meaning of being accepted as the first of the first fruits of God's great harvest, of those who are gleaned from the world to be in his family, Elohim. Joshua the Christ died on Passover and was laid in the tomb just before sunset on the fourth day of the week, Wednesday, in 31 AD. After sunset, the weekly observance of the Feast of Unleavened Bread began. Then, at the end of the seventh day, the weekly Sabbath, just before sunset, Joshua the Christ was resurrected from the dead after being in the tomb for exactly 3 nights and 3 days. Christ was resurrected just before sundown on that weekly Sabbath. As soon as the sun went down, it became the first day of the week, Sunday. It wasn't until the morning, Sunday morning, when the priests would offer up the annual wave sheaf, that Christ would then ascend to God. Christ, being received by God the Father at that very moment in time, was the spiritual fulfillment of the wave sheaf. Soon after that, on the same day, after he had ascended and been received by God, he returned to be with his disciples and others for the next 40 days. Not only is this time for the wave sheaf offering about the beginning of God's spiritual harvest, as it pictured Joshua the Christ being the first of the first fruits, but that day is also the beginning of a specific count that God gave so that people would know when the holy day of Pentecost is to be observed. Pentecost literally means count 50. Pentecost is the day when the wave loaves were offered up before God, and they picture the first fruits, the 144,000, being offered up before him to be received by him in the same manner that the wave sheaf was offered up before God for the acceptance of Joshua the Christ. Knowing the meaning of this extra 50-day count to Pentecost, along with the addition of two more prophetic periods of 1,260, proved to be awesomely inspiring to God's church. Paul described Joshua the Christ as being the first of the first fruits to be resurrected. In 1 Corinthians, a description is given of the order for all the first fruits of God to be resurrected, all those who would be first to be resurrected into God's family, Elohim. Christ is described as the first to be resurrected, and then the rest would be resurrected later at his return. Quote, "But everyone in their own order, Christ, of the first fruits, and afterward those, the rest of the 144,000 first fruits, who are Christ's at his coming." 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 23. Christ is described clearly as being resurrected first, and then the rest of those first fruits are resurrected at his coming. But for that to be accomplished, the sealing of all 144,000 must take place first. Chapter 14 in the book of Revelation begins by mentioning the 144,000 who will be resurrected to be with Christ at his coming. Quote, "These are the ones who follow the Lamb wherever he goes. These were redeemed from among mankind over 6,000 years, and are the first fruits unto God and to the Lamb." Revelation chapter 14, verse 4. Pentecost is the annual holy day that pictures the first fruits of God, the 144,000, who are resurrected to spirit life in the first resurrection at Christ's coming, and who will then return with him to the Mount of Olives on that day. The first five periods of 1,260 days that preceded the Pentecost of 2012 had 70 days added that symbolized the coming of Christ. There are two more periods that have been added that now make 7 complete periods of 1,260 days since the apostasy. These two new periods that followed have 50 additional days, symbolizing the coming of the first fruits, the 144,000, with Christ. These all contain very great meaning concerning Christ's coming to reign in the kingdom of God for the next 1,100 years. These complete prophetic counts that led up to the Pentecost of 2019 actually picture God's complete purpose being revealed in the counting that began when the apostasy occurred in December 1994. For all practical purposes, this countdown has been prophetically fulfilled. Second count to 2019. Pentecost 2012 to Pentecost 2019, 2,570 days, May 27, 2012 to June 9, 2019. Sixth and seventh prophetic, 1,260 days, from May 27, 2012 to April 21, 2019. Final 50 Days to Pentecost 2019. 50 is the count from the Waves Sheaf Offering to Pentecost, April 21, 2019 to June 9, 2019. The end of the countdown? Although God's church continues to look at the possibility of more prophetic markers to be fulfilled, God has not revealed any that have the kind of meaning that is contained in the period from the apostasy up to the Pentecost of 2019. There may be events that have already begun after that Pentecost that are rapidly leading up to a third world war that have not been seen and have not yet been revealed. However, what is clear is that there have been seven complete end-time periods of 1,260 days that reveal a clear countdown to Christ's coming. It would be wise to remember that the number seven is used for completeness in God's plan. At this point, it appears that the prophetic countdown to Christ's coming is complete, and therefore the prophetic countdown is over. This should be exceedingly sobering to all because this coincides with what has already been fulfilled in the book of Revelation. God has clearly revealed to His church that as soon as the sealing of the 144,000 is complete, then the events of the first four trumpets will be unleashed upon the United States. Everything to this point has been prophetically fulfilled as all seven seals of Revelation have been opened and the seven trumpets have already been announced. Those catastrophic events announced by those trumpets will begin once the sealing of all the first fruits is complete. If one can begin to grasp how God gave John the book of Revelation to write, of which the vast majority concerns the period of the countdown that began on the day of the apostasy, then seeing what has already been fulfilled should be exceedingly sobering. The seven seals of Revelation have all been opened. The seven trumpets of that last seal have all sounded, and the events they have announced can begin at any moment. This book is entitled When the Countdown Ends. It has been stated repeatedly that there is a countdown leading up to World War III and Christ's return. It is my strongest belief that the count of prophetic 1,260-day periods has been completed, and that countdown has ended, which was on the Pentecost of 2019. However, that does not mean that World War III or Christ's return had to happen on that day. It should be obvious that there is still a prophetic countdown that will one day be revealed that led right up to Christ's coming. How is that? It is by the knowledge that Christ will return on a Pentecost, but God has not revealed on what Pentecost that will be. So God's church will continue to watch for any new prophetic markers and inform everyone of those as soon as they are revealed, if there is time and ability to do so. What God has revealed is that the end-time countdown that led up to its complete prophetic fulfillment on the Pentecost of 2019 has been accomplished. All of this cries out that World War III is at our doorstep, and there is not much time to prepare. There are many who have mocked God's church for warning people to prepare physically for what is coming, by having a stock of food and other needful items that can last for 1 to 3 months. This isn't as funny or weird to those people as it once seemed to be. With a pandemic, now people can more clearly grasp the need for such a thing, and that will become far more essential once a war begins. Even something such as storing water becomes far more important, and or the use of a gravity-type water filtering system, the Big Berkey is one of the best. The event of the COVID-19 pandemic is proving to be the catalyst that will push nations into the final events that are about to be unleashed on a very unsuspecting world. The impact of the economic crisis that is now looming all over the world cannot be swept under the rug as it was in 2008. Nations are quickly hurtling toward a day of reckoning, and that is now pushing nations toward war. The global economy is beginning to implode. This began to accelerate well before the pandemic as a result of tariff wars that have thrown many nations into economic frustration with one another and massive disarray in the reliability of their own economic posturing and future plans. These are the kinds of things that push nations into war. Add to all this the escalating battle that has been taking place with just one commodity, oil. This one commodity alone has been the catalyst for wars over the past few decades. This is unhinging the very system the world economy has relied upon, and yet many nations hate this very system because of the petrodollar. Other nations are tied to the dollar, and if the dollar falls, so does their national revenue. Therefore, many feel trapped with the need to support it. Even today, as this is being written, It seemed insane that oil was about to drop to below $10 a barrel. But then it just got worse, as it lurched into negative territory. In the past, such a thing was unheard of, until now. This alone could easily lead to war. Add it all together, and it's easy to see that war is almost upon us. It is just a matter of when God will allow mankind to do what it is bent on doing anyway. Time is not on our side any longer, as everything is beginning to cry out that the world has arrived to the point of final prophetic events that are about to be unleashed in this last period of the end time. That final period begins with World War III and ends with the return of Christ. From this point forward, the world is somewhat living on borrowed time. The time to act is now. The time to prepare, if these events have not already started by the time you read this, is right now. Remember, if you will listen to God, He will listen to you.